this is John Davison, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 30 of the Yes Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember how you can get involved with the podcast on the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe through RSS via iTunes, via email to the blog post and episode updates. You can read and then comment on show notes or blog posts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast. You can send an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com. You can upload a file via the link on the right-hand side of the website, or leave a voicemail message and appear on the show yourself by calling 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417, or by recording a voice message straight onto the website using the Record a Message button on the extreme right-hand side. If you have a smartphone, you can also download for free the Stitcher.com app. As proof of the global nature not only of podcasting but also of the band of faithful Yes fans, I was delighted to receive a voicemail this week from Mishiru Kuruma, who lives in Japan. She went to see Yes live in Japan, and here's what she thought.
Hi, Kevin. This is Mishiru Kuruma, Japanese. I enjoyed the Yes shows and the 21st April last Japan tour, and really awesome. Contrary to my expectations, new vocalist John has an excellent voice, and Jeffrey's performance with new guitar and were so tremendous. The rhythm section of Chris and Aaron was a perfect pair, and Steve Soros' performance of Solitaire was so brilliant. Their performance was as Euro is no disgrace, Tempest Fugit, Your Move, Sing All Good People, and You and I, and Steve Soro, Solitaire, and Fly From Here, Full Version, and Heart of Sunrise, and Owner of a Lonely Heart, and Last Starship Trooper, and Encore Roundabout. By the way, if you don't care, would you mind telling me your email address? I would like to talk to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Many thanks, Mishiru. I must say your English is much better than my pronunciation of your name is. And I'm pleased you enjoyed the concert. It's wonderful to think that people all over the world are listening to the podcast. Please leave a voicemail yourself, wherever you are. This week I'm taking a look at an important collection in the earliest history of the band, the BBC Sessions from 1969 and 1970. I have a double CD collection called Something's Coming, the BBC Recordings 1969-1970, but the same set of recordings has also been released in the US, I believe, as Beyond and Before, the BBC Recordings 1969-1970, and, oddly, the Millennium Collection, of which I also have a copy. The BBC's commitment to recording young bands has enabled the creation of a priceless archive of material. Strictly speaking, I think, a BBC session is a studio recording, but the organisation also, of course, recorded many live performances as well. This collection of Yes recordings has both live and studio sessions. Incidentally, I was once lucky enough to record in the BBC Maida Vale studios, I may have mentioned this before, where a lot of sessions have been captured over the years. I played the drums for a steel pan group while I was at university, and we were asked to record some tracks for a BBC school's broadcast. At the end of the session, they also allowed us to record a medley, which we used to play. One of the members of the group had a cousin who was a recording engineer at Abbey Road, and he was kind enough to mix the track for us. So there's my little claim to fame. Anyway, back to Yes. The first track on disc one is not only the title track, but also one of two single B-sides here, Something's Coming, which appeared on the flip side of the band's first single, Sweetness. It's a very early cover version by the band. B Peter Banks points out in the lead notes that Yes began life pretty much as a cover band, which is fascinating in the light of the current lineup changes. Of course, as Banks also points out, they were never content just to play someone else's song. It had to be worked on extensively, with often extreme ideas and treatments thrown in to produce a Yes version. Something's Coming is no exception to this. Composed by Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim as part of West Side Story, it's not a song one might expect a rock band of the time to attempt, but Yes were never going to follow convention. Of course, the theme from West Side Story's America also made its way into the cover version of Simon and Garfunkel's song of the same name on Yesterdays. This recording, as well as the next four tracks, are from Top Gear with John Peel in 1969. Interspersed with Hammond organ-infused chords, Bill Bruford embarks on an elaborate, energetic solo introduction to the song, which ends with a fast snare pattern developing into a roll, and the bass drum counts the rest of the band in. Tony Kaye's Hammond sound then provides the bed for Chris Squire to extemporise, at first low and jazzy against Bruford's ride cymbal, and then spiralling up to the top notes of the guitar to produce a trademark lead bass passage, which is then taken over by Banks, who threatens to burst the speakers with a piercing trebly line. Everything goes atonal for a moment before the main song riff appears, in parallel on bass and lead guitars. Perhaps the first recorded Yes, Order Out of Chaos moment. It must have been staggering to hear this in 1969. The freedom of expression and passion is almost overwhelming. If you listen carefully, Squire actually adds in the America theme here as well. In passages such as these, it's clear that the energy of a movement like punk, still many years in the future, is present in the performances of these bright, excited, and exciting young musicians. More radical working through of the material is added next, and we're already over 2 minutes into the track, without any sign of Anderson's vocals. When he does appear, with the first verse, we are immediately treated to that voice. If the other musicians are not distinctive enough, when Anderson enters, this really could not be any other band in history. And it's such a treat to have this fantastic recording of them at their very beginning. There's a lovely bit of interplay between Squire's bass and the vocal line, and the backing vocals, despite what Banks says in the sleeve notes, sound committed and balanced to me. The level of the instruments is probably too high and the vocals are often swamped. This is undoubtedly a casualty of the lack of time in these BBC sessions. Banks mentions what a rushed job it felt at the time. I really like this recording, however. If you're looking for some early Yes you haven't heard before, then find a recording of this. It sounds fresh and exciting. Not content with the reference to America earlier, Banks now embarks on a rendition of the Troika theme from Prokofiev's Lieutenant Kije. It's interesting to see that this musical quoting started before Steve Howe joined the group. I had always previously associated it with him, along with Chris Squire. It's great fun and played with sheer abandon by Banks, whose carefree style is a very significant part of the basis of the sound. A recapitulation brings back the main material and the band moves through contrasting mini-sections, complete with dramatic use of backing vocals weaving yet another musical quotation in. This time it's from another West Side Story song, Tonight. And we finish with a short sequence of rising figures. While Something's Coming doesn't quite rival the later America arrangement, it clearly shows the unique direction the band were heading in. It shows emerging mastery of instruments, arrangement and ensemble. If I had been there at the time, I would have been very excited for the future of Yes, perhaps even more excited than I am today, listening to this archive recording. Who knows? The second track on disc one is Stephen Stills' Everydays, which, of course, didn't appear on record until the band's second album, Time and a Word. The jazzy, laid-back feel is here, with that Squire walking bass and Bruford in his element with brushes. It's a Hammond organ masterclass from Tony Kaye. His part seems much more explorative and free than on the record. The change to a more up-tempo feel works well, and is more live-sounding with great solo sparring from Banks and Kaye. The contrast is highly effective when the original material reappears, and Anderson sounds appropriately languid before the ending blasts us back to reality. While not radically different to the Time and a Word version, this is worth listening to, if only to get a bit of a sense of how it was played live at the time. Sweetness comes next, and as this was the first single, it's no surprise to hear the band nail this one. Squire's bass is particularly inspired, soaring up into the highest reaches of the instrument. Banks' wah-wah pedal is used beautifully as a subtle effect, and combines to great effect with the Hammond organ timbre. The honky-tonk piano sound is a bit more obvious than on the record, but overall it's a great performance, with a great sense of melancholy in Anderson's verse vocals, contrasting with the more upbeat chorus. The playout could go on forever for me, but it ebbs away in similar fashion to the LP version. The second single B-side is next, Dear Father, which I talked about recently, as it was also included on yesterday's. This is a very different version to the one recorded at the Time and a Word sessions. The opening seems heavier, and it's a less controlled arrangement with a different ending to the first section and start to the second. The vocals are similar when they arrive, but of course in this BBC session there is no added orchestral arrangement, just the band. However, the song seems to have the same power. The chorus is particularly effective with its strong backing vocals, sing-along hook, and John Anderson's semi-improvised counter-melodic musings. It's another track which must have been a revelation live, if the band managed to produce even half the impact of this session recording. I find I really don't miss the orchestra at the end of the track, as the whole band rev up to a climactic end. The recording gets a bit patchy, but overall it's a fantastic track. Every Little Thing is the last song from the first BBC session, and another cover version of the Beatles track, which also appears, of course, on the first album. The opening is similar but less restrained, and with slightly different lead guitar improvisation against the cacophony. Banks really enjoys himself once again in expansive style before the real riff appears, another great Order Out of Chaos moment, and I'm glad to hear that the Day Tripper melody is included in this version as well. Anderson enters with the vocals, which are almost identical to the record. The production is not as good, however, with some slightly odd echo on the backing singers. Squire is on top form with a bass line which must push the boundaries of what is possible harmonically as well as technically, and Banks throws in yet another quotation. This time it's from the Beatles' Norwegian Wood. Was that on the LP version? I don't think it was. The short playout is very much the same as on the album. So Yes's first BBC session contained three cover versions and two original songs. They are remarkably full of energy and commitment, and the band's unique brilliant arrangement and musicianship are obvious. It's a fabulous start to this two-disc CD set, and I'm wondering what's coming next. Track 6 is from the Dave Simmons Show 7 months later, and it's immediately apparent that either the production is much better, or the tapes have survived in much better shape. The sound is much cleaner and more crisp. The arrangement is very similar to the version on the first album. In fact, you could be forgiven for thinking this is the album version. A few notes of the Banks solos are different, and Squire varies some of the rhythms, but the rest of the band are as close as possible to the record. The song ends a bit abruptly, but I bet it came over brilliantly on the radio back in 69. Slightly strangely for me, the next two tracks are from the Dave Lee Travis Show 5 months later. By the time I was listening to Travis in the later 70s, he was presenting a children's breakfast show, I think, as well as Top of the Pops, so it's great to know that he championed the serious musicians of the late 60s as well. Sweet Dreams sounds like the band had settled on an arrangement for the song, and once again the only real departure from what appears on Time and a Word are the Tony Banks guitar parts, particularly the solo passages. I prefer the solos on the record, but this is probably because I know it so much better than this version. Up next is Then. This version is much shorter than the Time and a Word version, and is obviously again without the orchestral additions. The recording is a bit boomy in places, but generally it's pretty good. However, the end is cut off in a rather annoying manner. And finally on this disc, I'm fascinated to see how the band have tackled the Ritchie Havens cover, No Opportunity Necessary, No Experience Needed, which is down incorrectly on the sleeve notes as No Experience Required, without orchestra. This track is described in the sleeve notes as a rare German broadcast. It's a live performance with boomy sound and some slightly odd moments from Kay. The Wild West theme comes over well from Banks with Squire supporting. The raw power of this live performance is incredible, with Squire and Anderson vocals blasting away in great style. Bruford is on fire, and it's another example of what must have been a fabulous event to experience. As many Yes fans suspect, the track works just fine without the orchestra. The first five tracks on disc two of this collection are Peter Banks' favourites. He calls them easily the most representative offering of how Yes sounded in early 1970. They were recorded for the Sunday show at the BBC Paris Theatre in Regent Street, London. It's certainly very exciting and atmospheric to have John Peel introducing the band before they launch headfirst into Astral Traveller. The sound is surprisingly well balanced. The vocal harmonies are great and John Anderson very much leads from the front. Interestingly, of course, there is no spacey effect on Anderson's voice, which gives a different feel to the song, but it's no less filled with energy. Bill Bruford in particular is faithful to the recorded arrangement, and his creative treatment is a wonder to behold, as the deliberately placed spaces and rhythmical interpretation really help to ramp up the tension, as the instruments seem to be battling for supremacy. The playful passage in the middle, which involves the working through of material in a classically inspired manner, works really well in this live version, and the quieter section provides a great contrast. Peter Banks is once again virtuosic and free in his parts, but everything coalesces again with Squire's fantastic high flourishes, leading us back to the recap of the verse. I think I might even prefer the clean lead vocals minus the effect. It must have been a great opening to the mini-gig. Next we have another version of Then, taken at very quick tempo indeed. Once again the energy is infectious. At several points it sounds like it's just about to fly completely off the rails, crash and burn, but it doesn't. It just hurtles on like the proverbial express train, another one of those performances not to play when driving. Suddenly the quiet, mystical passage starts, and the sense of contrast is remarkable. This really shows the versatility of the band, and their confidence. It would be much easier to hide behind volume, but they are happy to introduce these much more risky elements as well. Sadly, the track seems to be cut early on this recording. The start of Every Little Thing is given an even more elaborate opening than on disc one. Once again, evidence of the musicianship of the band. There is a huge, expressive, wild soundstorm. Banks is at his improvisational, expressive, and a chaotic extreme here. It's dangerous music on the brink of atonal insanity, which is, of course, absolutely deliberate, to prepare the audience for the order out of chaos moment when the main riff of the Beatles' original appears. This must be the best example of this technique with this lineup of the band. It's astonishing. Yes was at this time, as we've said, essentially a cover band, but these are categorically not the kind of covers I have experienced from tribute bands and local cover bands. These are reinterpretations in Yes's unique style. They are pieces of creative mastery and really should not be referred to as mere covers. The band go on a musical journey to different countries in this performance. It's something you'll need to listen to yourself to understand the true impact. How I wish I could have been at these performances. Every Days is the penultimate live track from this performance. It's a good choice to bring the mood down to a relaxed, jazz-influenced vibe for a short while. This track does more to showcase the band's mastery of live performance, especially when the louder section starts in direct contrast to what has come before. It goes without saying that the playing is full of energy, tight and together. Banks heads off once again in a slightly atonal direction in his solo before tying down the main riff again. K is sparkling and intense, and then we move back into the quiet of the opening material, and the track finishes off with a similar flourish to the studio version. The final live track from this session, fascinatingly, is unique to this CD set, For Everyone. There is a very poor audio recording of the band playing this song on YouTube, in its full version, but it didn't survive past these early performances, probably due to the fact that the middle section was extracted and used elsewhere, as we shall see. I'll put a link to that YouTube recording in the show notes. Maybe another reason this track didn't survive is that the opening material sounds rather like the more run-of-the-mill pop bands of the time than Yes. I think it has something to do with the ride cymbal and the perky little Hammond organ figure. Even Chris Squire's archetypal melodic and wide-ranging bass line can't completely obliterate the pop feel. John Anderson's opening vocals are full of positivity and hope, and they interweave pleasingly with Squire's lead bass playing, but the lyrics are all about a love revolution everywhere, and it leans far too far towards the flower power end of the 1970s spectrum for me. I have no problem at all with the music of this movement, it's just that I don't think Yes were ever really a part of that scene, as you can hear on the rest of this collection. Their music had more depth of musicianship and creativity. This seems too frothy, too superficial, and the tambourine doesn't help. However, at about 2:10, something remarkable happens. Chris Squire launches into Loneliness is a Power that we possess to give or take away forever. It's an early version of Disillusion, which of course was to feature as part two of Starship Trooper on the Yes album. It would be easy to say that this section is much more effective than the preceding one, but as I know it so well, that would be unfair. Certainly it's remarkable to hear it as part of For Everyone in this live recording. The link from this section back to the original material is less convincing than other segues from the recordings here, and maybe that's another reason this track didn't survive. The ending has more power than the original exposition, but the track is faded out as Kay holds some notes, which is a shame. Overall, I think the live portion of the CD set is amazing. The band appear to play the five songs without a break. Maybe For Everyone was a poor choice to end on, but then again we can't hear exactly how it did finish on this recording. What is clear is that the lucky audience witnessed a band in the first blossoming of its youth, an experience I'm convinced they will never have forgotten. The rest of the songs on the collection are labelled bonus tracks. Radio 1 DJ Johnny Walker gives a short introduction to Sweetness, and this recording is from 1969 again. The production here, especially in the vocals, seems better than the previous version. The recording is from a few months later, and the band seem more at ease. Maybe they were getting more used to the process. Peter Banks's differing guitar parts, particularly in a wandering ending, and that slightly odd piano sound are here once again, but it's a very assured version. Tracks 7 and 8 are said in the sleeve notes to be from Top Gear with John Peel again, onto which they seem to have been invited back only a few weeks later. However, track 8 isn't, as we shall see. Track 7 is Something's Coming Again. Perhaps it was by popular demand, and of course few listeners would have had the ability or equipment to record the performances in those days. They seem to have developed the arrangement a little. It seems more polished, with more reverb in the vocals and less raw exuberance. The recording doesn't seem to have survived as well as the previous version, however. The differences are minimal, but it doesn't appear to have the same impact somehow. It's still a great performance, but if you had to choose one, it would be the earlier rendition, which is possibly why it's at the end of the collection. Track 8 is actually from Top of the Pops, and I think it might be Alan Freeman who introduces the band. This is perhaps the single version from Time and a Word, but if someone out there knows better, please let me know. Peter Banks's solo is very different to the album version, that's for sure. It's a very strong performance, whatever the source, very professional sounding. There's an odd moment towards the end where the tape appears to have been played backwards as an effect. This is the only instance I can think of where this kind of studio trickery appears on the early Yes recordings. Finally, we reach the last track, billed as a rare French broadcast. It's the first appearance here of Beyond and Before, and is undated. The production and balance are fairly rough, but the live performance is impressive, once again. The vocal harmonies are particularly good, and there is a very different arrangement in the middle from the album version. The tape has clearly deteriorated, but there is still much to enjoy about this archive recording, as it is clear from the end that the audience did at the time. So, overall then, this is an essential collection for any serious Yes fan. It gives a fascinating insight into the band at its beginning. Some songs appear as almost prototypes of the album tracks, and the live versions confirm the brilliance of the musicianship and ensemble. Something else which comes through strongly to me is the attitude and approach of Peter Banks. With hindsight, it's probably easy to read more in here than was actually the case, but I consistently hear Banks ploughing a slightly different furrow to the rest of the band. It appears to be Banks who wants to push the boundaries in these recordings further than the rest of the band. He is a bit wilder than the rest, a bit keener to explore tonality, a bit freer and more improvisatory with his solos. The other band members are fairly consistent between versions of the same song. Banks always seems to be trying out something new. Don't misunderstand me. I love Banks's style. I love the frequent feeling that everything is about to crash and burn. I love the sense of danger, experimentation, and excitement he radiates. What I'm suggesting is that you can hear in these recordings, perhaps, the beginnings of the looming split, the difference in approach and general attitude to the music. If you read Banks's sleeve notes from 1997, it's clear he was still very bitter about the way he was dismissed from the band, which was presumably at least partly due to the infamous Union Tour incident of 1994. Of course, as I say, what I hear in these recordings might all be down to hindsight. Why don't you listen and let me know what you think? So that's about it for this week. Next week I'll be delving into some more rarities, but from a rather different era of Yes music. In the meantime, please get involved at www.yesmusicpodcast.com, on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast, by sending an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com, by uploading a file or recording a voice message via the site. Finally, you could leave a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.